Midwest Guys presents Gotham Watch.
Yay, Gotham!
Tell Sal it's over. The guns are bought. The killing room is waiting. He doesn't know it, but he's a dead man. On second thought, I'll tell him myself.
Hello and welcome back to Gotham Watch. We're into episode 4 of the Rise of Villains season, and today with me I've got Anka Bauer. Anka Bauer, say hi.
What's up? What's up?
Not much, man. So we've come off our low of the Joker being killed off, or well, Jerome, whatever you want to call him, right?
Right.
And we're starting back this episode. We kind of started the rebuild, I guess you would call it.
The re-rise of
Gotham after they come off running and then come to a screeching halt. So
tripped over their shoelaces from the starting line.
Right, exactly. So, hey, can only go up from here, right? Hopefully,
we hope so. We hope so.
Okay. All right, well, Brian, I'll let you start first with what you thought was a good scene in this episode.
Okay, yeah, like, so we're going to – I was going to do something different this time. I'm not going to do favorite scenes. I'm going to do more memorable scenes for people who didn't get to watch the show. These are some of the scenes that you probably need to know about if you're just going to miss the episode, if your DVR didn't work or whatnot. The first scene I thought was kind of like important, or one of them would be the Victor Zsasz. He seems like he's a very, like he was an important character in the comics, and I think they can do a lot with him on this show. He just has that, that brutal and lethal attitude. And this scene on this episode, Penguin sends him in after one of the candidates for mayor, who happens to be surrounded by 5 guards, and they say, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it's an unfair fight. And Victor says, he says, yeah, there's only 5 of you. And like immediately takes them all out except for, I think, 1 or 2 that are helping the candidate run away. He ends up running into, whatchamacallit, the task force is what they're being called,
right,
with Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately he gets shot in the shoulder and he says that was a surprise, and then, you know, vanishes into the shadows. But I think they can do a lot with this character, so I was glad to see him get a little bit of screen time because we haven't seen much of him lately.
Yeah, he is... I guess if you could say anything, he is the closest thing to the Joker without having the Joker, or Jerome as the Joker, right? So, definitely a total psychopath, a very dark, crazy character. I think I would like to see more of him. I think they're, you know, he's definitely associated with the Penguin, and he's kind of the Penguin's right-hand man, kind of like he was with Falcone, right? So, I like him. I like him a lot. I think you may see a lot of him this season. I think they're going to put him up against this. I think they've created a rivalry with this task force through this scene, maybe. You know, because he was caught off guard because one of the new guys and part of this task force, you know, actually shot him and actually, you know, wounded him. So he was caught off guard by that. So I think you're going to see, you know. I don't know. What do you think, Brian? You think you might see maybe a rivalry this season between maybe Victor and the new, what would you
task
call
force?
Them? Task force, or
I mean, that's what they're called. They're being called the task force.
Kind of like an untouchables kind of thing going on,
right? Like they're all dressed in SWAT gear and not the usual police attire,
right?
I think it. I don't know if we're going to see it. To be like a main storyline, but I'm sure it's going to be like a personal vendetta of his to, you know, to attack the task force, you know, with them being, you know, it could turn into he has actually has respect for them more so than anybody else, because he's gone in almost every scene fairly fearless, like he was invincible.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. One of the things, first scene I kind of want to talk about is we start to see Bruce finally kind of start his training. You get Alfred, he comes out of school and he hands him a set of clothes with a pair of jogging shoes, and he says, I'll see you at home, Mr. Bruce. And he's kind of left kind of dumbfounded because he says it's, I forget what he said. He said, so many miles and it should take you about 2 hours.
Right.
If you run. So here we, you know, so we're finally getting to see maybe the boy who'll be the bat finally do a little hardcore training, maybe. I don't know. More than just throwing punches.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, because in the majority of, like, the movies and the comics, you see Batman keep going and going and going, and he usually doesn't run out of steam.
Right.
You know, and that's probably what this is for his endurance and everything, you know, being able to keep up the pace and go for long periods of time.
Right, because I think as we go forward, hopefully this season we'll see a transition of more of the helpless little boy Bruce into maybe more, you know, we've seen it in the last episode where he kind of stepped up mentally, but maybe we'll start seeing him physically. Maybe they'll start buffing up a little bit. I don't know. So
it could be.
Could be. So in that same scene, Brian, I think you want to talk about Alfred versus Selina there.
Yeah, so it caught me off guard, the way Alfred has been interacting with people in the Gotham universe here lately. You know, first we saw him interact with Lucius Fox,
mm-hmm.
in a way that we wouldn't normally think of Alfred acting.
Right.
With more of his military background coming out.
Mm-hmm.
In this scene, Selina Kyle's perched up on the wall looking over at the students, waiting for Bruce to come to the car. And Alfred sees her up there and says, you know, who are you perched up there for? And she says, I'm just waiting. And then she jumps down with this acrobatic Catwoman-like move. And when she lands, Alfred slaps her across the face and says, that one was for Reggie, which is his friend. He said, I know you killed her. You know, I know you killed him.
Right.
And says, I don't ever want to see you around Bruce again. He's better off without you.
Right. Yeah.
Better off without you in his life. And, you know, she kind of, you can see her start to kind of tear up.
Right.
And kind of runs away, right?
Right.
You know, and later in the episode, you see her kind of just moping.
Hmm.
You know, I'm wondering if that's how they're going to start the, you know, the forbidden love, you know, the want what you can't have.
Yeah.
You know, I'm forbidden to see Bruce, but I love him. And Bruce has already said, I miss you, Selina.
Right. And, you know, they had a later scene, like that whole tagline of him saying, I don't want to see you around here again, plays through her head. So it's already, she's going to do this out of spite, at least
right.
to start with, right?
So right. She's,
so I think we're going to see a lot more of her involved hanging around Bruce when Alfred's not looking at first and suddenly work her way back into his life, so to speak, right? So
right, but I don't know if she will or not. There's that new character, that
oh,
new
right.
role that he got right. introduced to.
Was it Silver or something like that? I can't remember.
Yeah, Silver.
Yeah, yeah. So
I don't even know. I don't recognize that from any of the comics. So.
So maybe some sort of a teenage love triangle set up there. I don't know. That's a good point, Brian. I forgot about that. So, yeah, maybe that would be an interesting little twist to watch develop, I guess, throughout the season. Mm-hmm. So from one kind of romance to a more crazier romance, we see a scene. The Riddler finally gets Miss Kringle, as he likes to call her, or is it Kristen, I believe, right?
Kristen, yep.
Yeah, Kristen Kringle to come to his house for dinner. He makes her dinner, and you see him meticulously at the beginning of the scene, you know, he has a blowtorch and he's making, some sort of creme brulee or something like that. And he's just off, you know, he's like crazy, because at first you think he's messing with like blood or something, but in reality he's making some sort of food with syringes and all kinds of crazy
stuff.
Yeah,
with syringes and beakers and all the scientific stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of cool, kind of creepy, and mm-hmm. But the thing I think that the takeaway from the whole scene is he overhears, he kind of he screws up, and because she starts talking about the guy in season one, the cop, I can't remember his name, but the
her boyfriend
that he ends up killing,
right?
And he goes, "I'm glad he's dead," and he's like, "I thought he just left," and he's like, "Oh well, figuratively, of course, I'm glad he's out of your life that he's dead." And she just kind of walks away and goes to the bathroom, and she comes back, he overhears him talking to himself again, to his alternate ego, and you know, say, "Go away." And he's like, she's like, "Who are you talking to?" And he's like, "Well," he admits, he's like, "Well, I have this voice in my head, blah blah blah." And she's like, "Well, I have voices too." And so yeah, she sounds like she doesn't have it quite all together.
And then they kiss.
Right. So we may have another crazy match, crazy psychopath kind of thing going on there. I don't know.
Yeah, it was definitely an odd scene. I mean, like you said, when you start watching that part of that scene, you're like, "Ooh, what is he messing with?"
Right.
You know, with the syringe and stick it in the other liquid. Mm-hmm. And then it pans to the table, and the vase is a beaker. The flowers room was a beaker, and it has other random scientific, you know, utensils and stuff there on the kitchen table. She shows up saying, "I thought this was going to be a restaurant." He's like, "Oh no, I love to cook." I mean, it was kind of odd.
Yeah, but very Riddler-esque, right? I mean,
yep,
the nerd.
And then at the very end, you get the nerd problem where they go to kiss and their eyeglasses clank.
Right,
and they both take their eyeglasses off,
and they smile
again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it could be one of those blooming romances on
Gotham. Yeah, and again, something to watch, because I want to see, just is she just as crazy as he is? You know, I mean, this whole time she's been playing the victim role. You know, the what would you call it? The in distress role, right? So, but
right. The damsel in distress.
Right, and now it sounds like maybe she might just be as nuts as he is. So, we'll see. Maybe you know, seems to be a lot of psychopaths in Gotham these days.
Yeah, like a lot of people going crazy, like Barbara did.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So, okay, Brian. So I think you got one more scene there that you want to talk about there.
Yeah, it's the new. He didn't say this. I don't think he said Did he say he was a captain?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a captain.
He said he was a captain because he's not the commissioner.
Right.
But Michael Chiklis, that we know from as the Thing from Fantastic Four.
Yes. And, yeah. He also played the commish. Yeah.
Yes, commish in commish.
Right. So I think that's why they named the captain. But yeah.
Yeah, he plays this badass. He's got like an army general thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in, is all gung ho, and he fired like seven people because they all had stuff, you know, to make them dirty cops. You know, and then he starts the task force, tells Jim he's going to be in command of this task force, and he's his right hand, he's second in command. And I like the way that's going. I like the way Michael Chiklis plays the character, because we knew that they were going to need help against these villains because Batman's not there yet.
Right.
So they had to have some way to fight against the villains until Batman does get there.
Mm-hmm.
So and this kind of feels like that's how they're going to push this, is this hardcore cop force, right?
Right, because he comes in and he fires like half the staff, right off the bat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The only thing I didn't care for in this whole thing was his original speech, because I felt like we just got that when Jim Gordon did the rant after Jerome's attack.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit of a repeat, yeah.
It felt like he said almost the same exact thing that Jim did, where, you know, they came into our house, and they did this in our house, and it's like, we just heard this last week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a necessary evil to kind of set up his character, because him and Jim are basically the same side of the coin, really. You know, they're pretty much the same. They have the same philosophy. The only problem is that, you know, Jim did that favor for Penguin, and now he wants to go after Penguin. So that's where the conflict's going to come in, you know, because he's pretty much is Jim Gordon before he did the favor for Penguin, right? So
right.
So, yeah, I think this is going to be interesting how it plays out. I think you're going to see Gordon wanting to be, he loves this guy because he is exactly like him and has the same philosophies and stuff, but he's not going to be able to do everything that this guy wants to do because he's already crossed the line and Penguin's holding it over his head. So,
right.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how it works out and see how it plays out. Again, you know, this whole episode is very foreshadowing and building, and I think this will be another storyline going forward. Another theme. It'll be the, can Jim be the cop that he wants to be while he's, you know, while Penguin still has an ace up his sleeve, you know? And I don't know. What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, the ace up his sleeve, you know, you can hold it over Jim's head. I mean, he even used that in this thing where when Jim said, well, you know, what are you doing? When he found out that Penguin was behind these attacks on the candidates for mayor.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's being handled. And he's like, well, you need to stop. And he just gets – Penguin got so upset because he didn't want to tell Jim that he was being blackmailed because Theo Gallistine has his mom.
Right.
Right? And right. So Penguin was – really adamant. He's like, what, you don't want me to tell your new boss about the favor that you did and you mm-hmm. killed a man? And Jim Gordon's like, well, that was self-defense. And Penguin says, well, where's your witnesses?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's just like we talked about it in the beginning of the season. You know, this is going to be a theme and he's going to use it and he's going to hold it over Gordon's head and Gordon's not going to be able to stand it. And and now with this captain, gung-ho captain in there, it's just more fuel to the fire. And it's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be a good plot line and a good storyline going forward. Yeah, definitely a new wrinkle, which is what we like about the show. I knew they would be bringing in somebody, and I wasn't sure which direction they were going to go after they killed off the commissioner.
Right.
So another good twist and plot going forward. Finally, my final scene I want to talk about is Penguin versus Theo. Brian, you already highlighted it, hinted towards it. In this episode, we see Theo bring the Penguin in and reveal his master plan to the Penguin, that he was the one behind the maniacs and that he's building himself up as a hero, that he's playing the devil as well as the angel, so to speak, and that he has this grand idea to build a brand new Gotham with these huge, he unveils his a model of Gotham, and it's right in the middle of a residential district, as Penguin points out, is these new, huge, gigantic high-rise buildings, and this his vision for Gotham, so to speak. And and he wants Penguin to play the new Jerome for him. So Penguin wants Penguin to be the
his new pawn.
His new pawn, his new bad guy to play against, to be his devil, to build him up to make him the angel of Gotham, right?
Right, because every hero needs a villain.
Precisely.
And it's even better when you can control both.
Exactly. And very Palpatine-ish, if I can throw in a little Star Wars reference there. So he wants to play both sides of the fence. And Penguin at first obviously rejects his idea because in Penguin's mind, he's already the king of Gotham. He doesn't need Theo. And Theo kind of schools him by showing...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Saying, right before you get into that.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny when Theo's sister says, "You're not the king of Gotham.
You're
the king of garbage."
Garbage, right.
Yeah, that was hilarious. All right, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's fine. And it's true, though, and, you know, and it pulls back into Theo's vision or his idea that Gotham is in ruins and you know, it was stolen from his family's birthright, blah, blah, blah. And he has this grand vision to save it, you know, in his head, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so he's the Penguin's about to leave, walk out on him, and he says, "Well, my sister loves this reality show. She's crazy about it. Why don't you show him?" And she turns on the TV, and it's, sure enough, it's Penguin's mom locked away in some room and helpless and crying for help. So he puts Penguin on this, he says, "Penguin, you're going to do this for me or your mom dies," essentially. Mm-hmm. Of course, Penguin says, "You'll pay for this." But anyway, he gets Penguin to kill, because he's running. You also in this episode see him run for mayor. He gets Penguin to play the bad guy and take a pop shot at him, and intentionally miss him, which where he steps up and says he's going to run for mayor, but also to kill off his rival politicians, which leads back to the Victor scene with that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this sets up Penguin versus Theo. Penguin was kind of on it, you know, on the top of the heap, or at least he thought he was, and now Theo's come in and kind of undercut him and is now kind of, I don't know if we want to call this, you know, he's schooling Penguin, because Penguin, he defeated the Fish, he defeated Falcone, well, at least Falcone's in hiding, and now, now he has to deal with Theo, which is, it's kind of like, okay, welcome to level two, let's see how you do with this one, right?
Yep.
So we're seeing a continued evolution of the character of Penguin. What do you think, Brian?
Well, I think in all the comics and everything, Penguin has henchmen. He has like an entire team of henchmen. They never really mention the fact that he's, you know, like a mob boss or whatnot. I think what we're going to start seeing is like you said, the Theo versus Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
And Penguin's going to have more of the henchman type attitude, and Theo is going to take over more of the mob style feel.
Mm.
A lot of people online are saying that they're talking about Theo is probably part of the Secret Owls group.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it. I know it's Owls, but I can't remember the
what the acronym is.
Owl Society or whatever it is. They're saying that he's part of that group.
Mm.
And what's even funnier is that in the preview of the next episode,
yeah,
they showed a guy in a cloak that was actually looked like he was the puppet master getting Theo to do the stuff he wants him to do.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was like, "Oh, so we have the higher power all of a sudden," kind of feel, right? So,
right,
yeah,
which I think is the Owl Society
leader, maybe, or
yeah,
yeah. So the plot is only going to thicken, and it's going to be more twists and turns. This episode, like I said, is kind of like the rebuilding episode. It was a lot of foreshadowing, I think. They were setting up new plot lines, twists. We have this, you know, we got all these different things, these things going on. But I think one of the major themes is definitely going to be Penguin versus Theo and his rivalry and how he's going to have to try to outwit him. Kind of like how he outwitted Fish and how he outwitted Falcone, because even in the next in the preview, as you alluded to, Brian, there's a scene where Penguin goes, "I get it." He's talking to Theo. He goes, "I get it. You're the boss." So he's right back to being, you know, what he was in season one, except now he's dealing with Theo, and he's realized that, you know, he's going to have to mentally deal with him like mm-hmm. he did with Falcone and Fish. So, another great. I think it's getting more interesting. At first, I was kind of like, this Theo's kind of boring, and he still kind of is. And but I'm hoping that this is going to be one way to make it more interesting. Do you think it's going to make it more interesting, maybe, Brian, or do you think maybe he might just, I don't know.
Oh, I hope so. Like I said, his character so far has been so boring. You know, and look, the big joke online is that everybody says, you know, he's so gung-ho about his forefathers being, you know, not given credit and, you know, being cheated out of their inheritance and, you know, the city was essentially stolen from him and, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, I just get like this, I have a lot of money and I'm a big baby and just do what I want, you know, but I don't get the villain part of it yet. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's broken people out of Arkham and he has this big master plan a little bit, but I haven't seen the evil.
Yeah, he's like the Diet Coke of evil right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're quasi-evil.
Yeah. The diet villain.
Yeah, the diet villain. So, yeah, I'm hopefully it'll become more than the aristocrat villain. Maybe we'll see him get a little bit more sinister against Penguin. Maybe Penguin will bring that out in him. I don't know, hopefully. So, pretty good episode, but I think there's only one thing left to do, and that's time for final thoughts. All right. Well, Brian, I'll let you have the honors of going first with final thoughts, sir.
Okay. So my final thoughts on this this episode, it felt very flat to me. I think I'm still coming down off the high from the first two episodes. They went so fast and so furious and just, you know, right in your face. And yeah, you pumped for this season and were like, oh my gosh, the season's going to be great. And we've had two back-to-back. Well, last week was really disappointing, and then this week was more of a, it felt like a kind of like a filler. Yeah. You know, like it was the backstory that needed to happen to get us going back up that roller coaster.
Yeah.
But you know, we lost Jerome. We lost that Joker. Like, you know, this is starting to get good, and now we're back to Theo, which we just talked about. He's so boring.
Right.
He doesn't bring any excitement into the scenes. So I'm hoping that they can bring back that feeling that we had for the first two episodes, you know, in some of the next episodes. You know, I find it odd that they had the maniacs and it was this group of villains that were going out, you know, and then we went down to three. and then we went down to two.
Yeah.
Now nobody's seen that brute, you know, the big dumb guy. Nobody's seen him in two episodes now.
Right.
And all we see is Barbara. She's saying she's getting tired of being cooped up.
Yeah.
And she makes out with his sister and then makes out with him, but she's not really, I don't know, I'm hoping that we get back up into this, into that higher level. But this episode felt a little flat for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, same here. My final thought is we're coming down off the, it's like the post-mortem of the Joker, right? Because they used the Joker as a red herring with us, the fans, because they got us all excited, all pumped up, and then for two episodes, and then boom, he's gone. And we're like, what? You know, and now, you know, we're left like, oh my God, where is this going to go? This could have been awesome. It was like I was saying last week, I was like, I had Joker versus Penguin in my mind. This is going to be great. It's going to be great. Awesome. They're going to do this and this and this and this. And then they just kill him and it's a total left turn. And you're like, left to go. Where is it going to go from here? And I think we got a little bit of our answer in this episode. They started rebuilding from that low point, right? And it's a big twist and turn. And as much as I'm upset with the killing of Jerome, and I still am, I think it's one of the reasons we like the show, though, too, is we never know what's going to happen next. And that's the reason why we tuned in again this week. to see where it's going to go next. I think we're starting to get a, maybe they're giving us a few hints. Hopefully there's no more red herrings. I think they got us good this season. Let's hope that ends. But yeah, I think it's a rebuilding episode. We know where it's going from here. Hopefully we know where it's going from here. At least we got a few ideas from where it's going to go, and hopefully there'll be some more twists and turns, minor as we go forward, and the season can only get better from here, I hope. I don't know, Brian, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still hoping yeah. It gets better. If it doesn't get better, I think it's going to fall victim to the whole Fox mantra, where if ratings drop at all,
yeah.
Oh, cancel the show, cancel the series. They've done that with every show, even their big, the big money makers, even the ones that are good episodes, they still draw in the ratings. If that show drops in ratings,
yeah,
they're very quick to pull the trigger on it. They had X-Files or Terra Nova or what was some of the other ones? Fringe.
Mm.
You know, yeah. they've had some good ones that they could have, despite the fact of a one-off season, could have renewed for another season, to bring excitement back into it, but instead chose to just walk away, cut their ties and walk away. I'm just hoping that's not what's going to happen for Gotham.
Yeah, I certainly hope not either. I hope after season one, especially, that Gotham's at least earned not just this season, but next season. But you're right, Fox is very, I don't know if the word's frugal, but they're very quick to pull that trigger. Yeah, if things aren't going the way they like them, or if they notice a sudden trend change or something, they kind of, wherever the wind blows, they usually change direction. Unless it happens to be 24, which they keep trying to bring back from the dead, so
right, exactly.
Really good show, Brian. Thanks for joining me this week. And if you're wanting to know how to find us, you can find us on facebook.com/4MidwestGuys, the number 4 Midwest Guys. You can find us on Twitter at the number 4 Midwest Guys, and you can reach us via email at the number 4 MidwestGuys@gmail.com. Once again, guys, cannot state highly enough how much we want to hear back from you. We're self-grading ourselves, but that only goes so far, and we just really would like to hear back from you. So far, we haven't heard anything, and we really, even if you're just friends of ours out there that are listening, we'd like to hear back from you. We need to know. You can only get better through criticism, and if there's something wrong or something you think we can do better, let us know. If you say the show is great, I would love to hear that too as well. But I'm definitely looking for some feedback. And I know Brian is as well. So, all right. Well, again, it's been a great show. And for Enkenbauer and myself, we'll catch you next time on Gotham Watch.